This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Tom Bullock in for Mike Collins. The Charlotte-Mecklenburg police will soon be equipping all of their officers with body cameras. They'll record audio and video of police officers' interactions with the public. The police department sees the body cams as a way to build trust with the community. Here's what Chief Rodney Monroe of the CMPD told the City Council in January.
When you start talking about the trust within the community, in order for us to do a whole lot of other things, we have to continue to build upon that trust.
And that's all we'll hear from the CMPD on this show. They've declined multiple requests to talk about police-worn body cameras and how they'll be used. But others are happy to talk. Joining us from his office in Raleigh is Chris Brook, legal director for the ACLU in North Carolina. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. Always happy to talk. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for being on. And joining us here in the studio are Christopher Woodyard, a professor at the Charlotte School of Law. He teaches criminal law, criminal procedure, and legal ethics. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Chief Gene Miller of the Davidson Police Department. Davidson Police was the first to equip its police officers with body cameras in Mecklenburg County. Chief Miller, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I'd like to start with you, Chief Miller, if I may. When did the Davidson Police Department decide to equip all of their officers with body cameras and why?
Well, approximately 2 or 3 years ago, two of our officers actually went out and bought a body-worn camera of their own, and told us that they wanted to wear them. And we quickly had to back out of that, not allow them to carry the cameras for a number of reasons. One was that we didn't have control of the chain of the evidence, the chain of custody. We didn't know what was going to happen to the video that they were taking, and so it really, though, began a discussion within the Davidson Police Department of the desire of our own officers to have this kind of equipment. And so in last year's budget year, we asked for the money to start buying body-worn cameras, and we were approved. So on July 1st, we were able to go out and start the initial purchase of the body-worn cameras.
That's really interesting that it was police officers who came up with the idea and basically kind of jerry-rigged their own system. Why? Why would they think, I mean, what would the cameras bring to them that they didn't already have with, say, dashboard cameras?
Well, dashboard cameras are excellent for what they capture. The problem, especially with the in-car camera, is that the body mic will not reach after a certain distance from the car. And oftentimes our officers find that the audio is as important for them in terms of evidence and interaction as is video. And so when they got far away, if they got into a house, the body mic quit working. And they really wanted something that they could take with them. And our body-worn cameras allow that.
And we'll get to the other guests here in just a second. But for those folks who have not seen body-worn camera footage or heard that audio, can you describe it for us?
Well, the video, depending on where the camera is located on the officer's body, because there are different styles. Some of them, there's a little torpedo that can be attached to a baseball hat or your eyeglasses or the lapel. Our cameras are a small, look like an old pager about that size, and sit at mid-chest. And that's where they're activated from.
And the footage, is it wide? Is it tight? Is it like a cell phone?
It can be pretty tight. And that's some of what we're discovering with this is that in any technological advancement, we're finding pluses and minuses. And so I fully see that, you know, that the manufacturers of this equipment are really going to be listening to what officers have to say in the field in terms of the effectiveness. I mean, take, for example, you don't want a really high definition photo at night if that's not what the officer is seeing. So you want the body-worn camera to capture as accurately as possible exactly what the officer is seeing under the lighting conditions that are provided, and then also what they're hearing.
So Chris Brook of the ACLU, I want to bring you into the conversation. And one of the reasons I want to bring you in was specifically with this caveat. Normally, one would expect the ACLU to not be in favor of more cameras in the hands of police after fears of surveillance. But the ACLU is actually supporting body cameras.
Yes, absolutely. And it's something that we always are having a discussion about with, you know, our members, but also members of the public throughout the state, because there is some skepticism around this sort of technology, as it seems, you know, sort of minority report, and that it certainly increases the amount of information that is being captured by the government, by law enforcement, and the real concerns related to the retention of that data and associated privacy concerns. But we believe that body cameras employed by law enforcement with appropriate and proper regulation can be a win-win for the public and for law enforcement. I think for the public, they can protect against instances and episodes of police misconduct, and for the police, they can protect against frivolous claims of abuse and on occasion help document crimes such as driving while under the influence offenses. And, you know, I think, you know, another positive for both law enforcement and for the public is that in communities where this technology has been deployed with appropriate regulation, you've seen a substantial drop in the use of force in those communities. And I think the logic is relatively simple there. Whether it's the police or whether it's the public in general, folks tend to behave a little bit better when they're on camera.
And Christopher Woodyard, I saw you nodding your head when Chris Brooks was talking about kind of the overall fear of Minority Report, which again is a kind of a famous Tom Cruise movie where everything is being watched by the government.
Yeah, back in the late 1700s, a English philosopher put forth the concept of a panopticon, which essentially was, in the prisons, if we can make everybody think they're being watched 24/7, they'll behave. And I think with a lot of the police departments across the country that have had pilot programs, have implemented body cameras, they have certainly seen, I believe the empirical data supports, that we have had a reduction in both complaints about law enforcement activity and we've had a reduction in the number of bad behavior by members of the citizenry. The question then becomes, though, exactly how far do we want this panopticon to extend, all right? Does it include walking down the city streets of Charlotte with everything being on footage with the cameras? So, you know, when Charlotte does implement this program, we'll have 1,000 more cameras at any one time walking around the city streets, catching a whole bunch of information. And I think that really highlights the need. And I believe that both of your other guests agree with this, is that this cannot be lightly entered into. In fact, earlier conversations with Chief Miller before the show started, it's very clear that Davidson took a very deliberate and purposeful approach to how they were going to implement this program, took public comment. I think all these are very important things to make sure you do before you implement a program. And maybe that's some of the reticence that Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department is not coming on the air today, is because they're maybe hopefully taking that time to have that deliberate, purposeful approach to make sure the right policies are in place.
And in fact, Chief Miller, you have your transparency policy and all of your body camera policies posted on Davidson's Police Department's website, which I think is a wonderful thing to see. So that way you can actually go through and see specifics of instances. But there's one thing I want to bring up just off the top, because there's a lot to unpack in this conversation. The first thing is, who controls the recordings? Is it still initiated by the police, or is it automatic in Davidson?
In terms of activating the camera?
Correct, yeah.
On the body-worn cameras, it has to be manually activated. You know, we're at the very beginning, I think, of some of this technology. And so I know that there are manufacturers out there that are already looking to see if there is a way to automatically activate the camera when, for example, the cruiser lights, the emergency lights go on. Our in-car cameras are automatically activated when that happens. But the body-worn camera at this point in Davidson is manually activated by the officer.
And under what circumstances do they activate those cameras?
Well, they have to activate them for a traffic stop, If they're investigating a suspicious vehicle or a suspicious person, they've gotten a call to go investigate that. If they're initiating an arrest, if they're making a voluntary contact, but it's of an investigative nature, if there's a disturbance or a disorder, if there's a mental health issue. So if they're responding to somebody who's having mental health issues, and then any offense that involves a weapon or is reported to be violent.
And I want to bring in a listener comment, actually. We went ahead and posted on Facebook to ask people what concerns they have about body cameras and the mm-hmm. footage they record. And this one from Dave on Facebook asks, what measures will the police departments take to ensure that the cameras cannot just be arbitrarily turned on and turned off? We understand here the situation of when they're supposed to. What happens if they don't?
Well, one of the things that happens for within Davidson, and obviously we're a smaller agency, and when the camera comes in at the end of the shift, a supervisor is actually in charge of downloading the video. Now, understand that the technology, the camera will record up to 6 hours of video. If the camera has 6 hours on it, it doesn't loop over or record over what's there. It just simply stops recording and will not activate again until the current video is completely downloaded into the system.
But what about the instance where, let's say, and this is bound to have happened in Davidson and in police forces everywhere, what if an officer in a traffic stop forgets to tap that pager-sized recorder, forgets to initiate the recording?
In Davidson, all of our cruisers have in-car cameras. So in terms of a traffic stop, it would still be recorded. It just – they would have forgotten it. Now, one of the things we're trying to do, though, is that if a supervisor starts to see that an officer has a traffic stop, there should also be attendant body-worn camera video with that. And if they're not seeing that the officer is activating their camera, then there will be training and an insistence of learning. We're also incorporating the use of the cameras during our training so that officers have to get that muscle memory going.
And have you seen – is there an officer, without making reference to a name, that has repeatedly forgotten to record?
No. Our officers have embraced this technology 100%.
What would happen procedurally? What would happen possibly in terms of some kind of disciplinary action if you found that?
If we found that someone was purposefully avoiding the use of the body-worn camera, we would take steps that we would need to take to make sure that it's being activated.
So, Christopher Woodyard, I want to go back to you with this idea of the cameras watching us everywhere. And we've got just a little bit here before we get to our first break. But what level of privacy can your average everyday member of the public expect today before body cameras are actually deployed in Charlotte?
Well, privacy is a very tricky thing. Privacy with respects to government intrusion versus privacy with respects to individuals. There's a whole lot of facets to privacy. But as we have become a society that is very technology-driven, social media-driven, we have – the norms in society have changed. Mm-hmm. If you're walking up and down the city streets of Charlotte, you can somewhat expect that you're going to be filmed by people on their iPhone, mm-hmm. people with security cameras, and very soon police officers potentially could be recording you as well. And so it's really hard to get completely into privacy, and I realize our time is running short, so there's a whole lot of facets.
And we'll come back to that here after this short break, and we'll talk about the footage that these cameras use and how that can be used in a moment. Stay tuned. This is Charlotte Talks.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Scharf, Para & Company, providing professional tax, accounting, and auditing services for individuals and businesses, estates, and trusts since 1975. Details available at scharfpara.com. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, the calendar may say there's 3 more weeks of winter, but gardening experts say you need to start thinking about spring and summer right now. They say there are so many things you can be doing indoors that'll reap a bountiful harvest outdoors in a few weeks. A panel of master gardeners and guest host Chris Clackham will weigh in on what you should be doing right now in the waning days of winter to make for a bountiful harvest later on Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 here on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Supreme Court takes up a major challenge to the Affordable Care Act this week. The ruling could make health insurance unaffordable for millions of Americans. King versus Burwell and the future of the ACA.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Tom Bullock in for Mike Collins. We're discussing the use of police body cameras, which will soon be used by every patrol officer in the CMPD. Our guests are Chris Brook with the North Carolina chapter of the ACLU, Christopher Woodyard of the Charlotte School of Law, and Chief Gene Miller from the Davidson Police Department, the first in Mecklenburg County to equip its officers with body cameras. Now, Chris Woodyard, you were just talking a moment ago before the break about this overall concept of what is and is not considered a private space now, with everybody having, you know, cell phone cameras and being able to record everything just about everywhere. But actually, I want to start this segment with you, Chris Brook of the ACLU. I want to talk about this idea of access, which is one of the trickier parts when it comes to police body camera footage. Can you walk us through what your concerns are in terms of access and what the state of access is in North Carolina right now?
Well, I think that the way body cameras have been billed thus far, and the reason that we are supportive of them with proper regulation, is as not a tool of surveillance, first and foremost, but as a tool of transparency and accountability, first and foremost, which means, you know, that's a two-way street. As I was discussing previously, certainly body cameras have value to law enforcement because they're able to demonstrate what occurs in most instances, which is that a police officer or sheriff's deputy is acting reasonably and therefore can dispel potential claims against law enforcement. But at the same time, it has to be a two-way street such that the public, in particular those who are captured by body camera footage, have access to that footage so that law enforcement can be held accountable, so that the public can know and have greater trust in those who are here to protect and serve. In North Carolina right now, it is a little bit unclear exactly how much body camera footage would be available to the public under our current statutes. You know, we have statutory provisions that make criminal investigations not a public record in North Carolina. We have statutes in North Carolina that say that personnel records are strictly confidential here in North Carolina, and there's an argument out there that that would make the vast majority of body camera footage not publicly available. I think there are other arguments that we believe could be made that would allow more flexibility for body camera footage to be made available. But you know, one of the positive things that we've been able to do with some police departments, including the Greensboro Police Department, is have discussions about putting forward legislation to make bring essentially our statutes into the 21st century and make it such that body camera footage is much more available to the public, in particular those who are captured, their image is captured, their interaction with law enforcement is captured on a body camera, so that this technology can fulfill its accountability and transparency purposes.
And that trust that they always talk about building with the community, being built on making sure everybody can see exactly what's in front of them. Now, Chief Miller, I'm going to ask you this question. I would love to ask it from the CMPD, but again, we do need to know that they declined to talk about their use of body cameras and their specific policy. So I'll ask you about Davidson, Chief Miller. What is your access policy? Are these recordings of this body camera footage public record, or is it something that you would need, say, a subpoena to get access to?
Right now, we would not just willy-nilly give away the record, the video. If someone wanted to see their own interaction with an officer, we would more than likely share that with them.
But more than likely, that's not a guarantee. It's not a yes or a no.
We probably would, yes. I mean, I haven't had a request, and we've been doing this since the middle of September. We have had people ask to see their our in-car footage of a traffic stop, and I've allowed that because I think that most often it helps someone make a decision, you know, for example, about a traffic ticket or their interaction with the officer. Sometimes they remember it differently than it was. And then when they see the video, they realize that it was different than the way they recall it. So for us, we would generally allow on an individual basis the access. And then, of course, if it's necessary for court, it's provided to the court and to the defense attorney.
And again, there are basically two laws here, or two sets of laws that are defining what is and what is not a public record, in this case of body camera footage.
Right.
The first is personnel. A personnel record, because I'm assuming that this footage can be used to basically evaluate the conduct or just the job performance of an officer.
Right. So if someone called and they said this officer was rude to me, or, you know, let's just leave it at that, that this officer was rude to me, and there was going to be an investigation, a disciplinary investigation, that would not necessarily be a public record. That would be – we would have to keep that confined to the investigation with the officer.
And the other circumstances, my understanding, is if it's part of a criminal investigation. And Christopher Woodyard, I'll come to you with this one. What is – why the need to keep that away from the public? If that footage is there and it does show, you know, let's say, the commissioning of a crime, why is it important to not let the public see that?
Well, there's several issues. If the only purpose for the cameras was police accountability, then this would be an easy equation, and open access would make a lot of sense. The reality, though, is there's a lot that comes into the calculation. First off, law enforcement officers are given broad powers to enter our most private enclaves, into our home, both for legitimate reasons and sometimes, unfortunately, for illegitimate reasons. And we would be very skeptical if someone was allowed to walk in on off the street with their cell phone camera and start filming in my private enclave. But police officers will have this ability to do so. And so you're not only capturing people in their most vulnerable of moments, you're also capturing stuff that they never wanted to advertise to the broader public. You know, I invite people over to my house to see the pictures on my walls. I don't invite everybody that turns into a YouTube channel or tunes into Cops or to some other documentary to see what's going on in my house. And so that poses a real risk, and it's one of the major reasons why there has to be very clearly delineated policies as to access.
Sure. And Chris Brook, I know you've thought a lot about this as well.
Yeah, and to put, you know, an even finer point on it, let's make an example, put a hypothetical out there. If there's a domestic violence phone call from a house in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, and a victim, survivor of domestic violence calls, and police come into that house, I think no one should be or would be comfortable with that footage being splashed, you know, on every television news network in Charlotte that evening, because that is a situation where we have police cameras in a private home where the news media typically would not be allowed. But I do think that, you know, one of the ways to deal with a number of these issues is to default to empowering the person who is captured on body camera footage, the person who in that instance might have made the phone call, to have the opportunity to access that footage. And I think that Chief Miller is certainly pointed in the right direction in saying that that's the default in regards to how Davidson handles these situations. But I do think that we need more than sort of an informal default. There really does need to be a formal policy that says if you're captured, if your image is captured, if your interaction is captured on a body camera, then you are going to be able to access that. That does not mean that there's sort of radical transparency of police interactions, especially in private spaces.
Well, let's open this up for anyone who wants to take this question. Why isn't that the case now?
I think that the technology has outpaced the law. And I think that the state legislators need to address that outpacing. I hope that that's a really thoughtful conversation when they have it, and that they include stakeholders so that they understand what does get captured on video. When people dial 911, it's not because they're having a good day. And they are oftentimes captured in their most private, agonizing moments, you know, with whatever's going on in their lives. And to have that automatically become a public record, I don't think is what anyone wants. It's certainly not what we think is would be wanted. But I think that there should be a process where when the public good especially might be served, that there's a process, that there is something codified that allows a person who's captured on body-worn camera or in-car camera to know that they can see that themselves and have a copy of it if they wish. You know, is that the kind of conversation we need to have at the state legislature? And I think that it is.
Absolutely. And as more and more individual departments start to adopt body cameras, it's going to force the legislature's hand. They're going to have to address it. Because when you can drive on the I-85 corridor and pass through 15 different jurisdictions from Charlotte to Raleigh and have 15 different policies with respect to the body cameras, I mean, it's going to force the legislature to respond and pass a statewide policy.
But there are all kinds of pitfalls when it comes to this. I'm sorry, Chris, so just one moment. Like, let's talk about when it comes to transparency and access, what if, you know, I happen to be in a hospital and happen to be recorded on a body camera and I ask to see the footage? Well, what if that footage gets others who are in the hospital? Are these other areas where people expect a certain level of privacy?
Right now, we are deactivating cameras unless we are one-on-one with a patient or a crime victim. But we would not just walk in and be recording.
Yeah, privacy, and this is back to what I was stating earlier, privacy is a hodgepodge of all these different laws. There's no uniform definition of what privacy is. We get some sense of privacy constitutionally from the Fourth Amendment. But, you know, we have FERPA for education and HIPAA for healthcare. We just have this collection, mass collection of different privacy laws that apply in different scenarios. And it's really hard to get a grasp on what privacy really even means.
Chris, I know you were trying to get in there.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with the comments that were previously made by Professor Woodyard and Chief Miller. I really think that this is something that the technology has just outpaced where we are with the regulation, and I do think that there needs to be a very deliberate conversation that involves law enforcement, that involves privacy advocates, that involves advocates for police accountability in formulating policies that strike the right balance between individuals' privacy interests and the transparency value that can be brought to bear.
So let's do a little
these body cameras.
Let's do a little bit of the General Assembly's work for them then. Let's have a bit of that conversation. What would that conversation sound like? What are the salient points that you think they need to address?
Well, I think you need to have discussions about when body cameras are going to be turned on and develop some defaults where we default towards full capturing of interactions between law enforcement and the public. I think there needs to be a discussion about access to that video. And again, there should be a default where, in particular, those who are captured on body cameras have the ability to access their interaction with law enforcement. There needs to be a conversation about privacy and how long footage is going to be retained by the law enforcement community and ensuring that this is not used primarily as a surveillance tool as opposed to an accountability tool. Let me give you an example. In Asheville recently, the police department revealed that they had been filming all of the political protests that had been taking place in Asheville and had retained those videos for years. And when the Citizen Times in Asheville sought access to those videos, they would not allow them access, even as they claimed that they really didn't need those videos anymore. So I think that demonstrates that there really do need to be hard and fast rules in place about why we're retaining this footage, how long we're retaining this footage, and ensuring that, you know, the First Amendment protected activity is not swept up by this technology.
So, Chief Miller, let's ask you as the representative of Davidson about those policies. I know when I was in Greensboro reporting this series, which you can find on our website, WFAE.org, looking at body cameras, they hold their footage indefinitely. And the rationale for that is it's better to be safe than sorry. There's not enough case law to tell us what to do. Here in Charlotte, the CMPD is saying we're going to hold ours for 45 days unless it's involved in either a criminal investigation or a civilian complaint. Where do you guys fall on that?
Right now, we are trying to follow the public records law, although we're going to probably introduce that's the one change that we see in our policy. We would like to be able to hold and retain the records at least through to whenever civil litigation could be filed against us. So that would be a minimum of 3 years, generally speaking.
But as of right now, are you holding it indefinitely or are you manually purging the system of
It's manually purged.
And how often is it purged?
Every 90 days.
Okay. And why – I mean, one of the things that strikes me about body cameras, and again, we're, you folks are well ahead of any kind of case law or any kind of best practices. Everyone's still trying to figure that out. Why the 90 days instead of 45 days or 30 days or indefinitely? Why was 90 days the magic number?
It was what the it was what our system held.
Okay, fair enough.
Although I think that one of the things you have to keep in mind, and this is again, you know, there's a big difference between an agency like Davidson. We could keep our video for a long time, but in some instances, the size of the agency. How long you store that, you know, who has the storage for that capacity storage can become a huge financial issue. Managing the video, knowing, you know, okay, here's a piece of video. We made an arrest on a DWI. We're going to have to hold it until the case goes to court. Now the case is finished and now we can purge it. But that might be 3 or 4 years down the road. You know, it's those kinds of everyday management issues that agencies are going to face in terms of how they keep and store and record and organize this video. And the one thing that we in Davidson realized very quickly was we immediately doubled the number of videos that we were creating. So once the officers started activating or started wearing the cameras, every time they did a traffic stop, we have the in-car camera, and now we have the body-worn camera, plus whatever else they might capture with the body-worn camera.
Professor Woodyard, I want to go to you about the storage issue specifically, too, with Asheville Police. I mean, what are the ethics of just recording these kinds of meetings and basically keeping the video, even though they say, at least, that they're not doing anything with it?
Well, police have been recording for long before body cameras ever existed. And oftentimes it was a practice, especially when you had large groups. If the Panthers were ever to win the Super Bowl, I'm sure that there would be officers out there recording the large groups, because when large groups gather, bad stuff can happen. And that recording can be good, solid evidence. So I don't have an issue necessarily with the recording of large groups. Whether or not there was political motivation behind the recording, that's a whole separate can of worms that I won't get into. But from an ethics standpoint, I don't see any issue with the recording when it's done and it's following a particular policy, which I think that was lacking in Asheville. There
right,
was
well,
no policy.
Well, we will pick up this conversation here in just a moment after this break. More on body cameras coming up here in just a second, and big data and storage and the potential for this footage to be mined. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and McCall Center for Art and Innovation's Innovation Institute, helping groups, teams, and companies build their creative capacity to accelerate business performance. Details at mccallcenter.org/innovation. Coming up next at 10 o'clock, in about 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show, King versus Burwell and the future of Obamacare. The Supreme Court takes up a major challenge to the Affordable Care Act this week. That ruling could make health insurance unaffordable for millions of Americans. We'll take a look at King versus Burwell and the future of the ACA. That's The Diane Rehm Show in about 20 minutes at 10, here on 90.7 WFAE. Charlotte Talks continues in just a moment.
Thank you.
Martin Grable, president and CEO of Community Blood Center of the Carolinas, talks about underwriting on WFAE.
We get to support a community-based public radio station reaching a diverse group of local listeners. And I can't tell you how many times people come up to me and say they've heard our message on WFAE.
For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Tom Bullock. This morning, we're hearing about the good and the problematic when it comes to police body cameras. Our guests are Chris Brook with the North Carolina chapter of the ACLU, Professor Christopher Woodyard of the Charlotte School of Law, and Chief Gene Miller from the Davidson Police Department, which was the first in Mecklenburg County to equip its forces with body cameras. And it is important to note, we did invite Charlotte Mecklenburg Police to take part in this conversation. They have repeatedly declined that invitation, but you can always join the conversation. Search us out on Facebook and Twitter at WFAE. All right, let's go back to one of the founding things that I don't think a lot of people understand about body camera footage, both the audio and the video. It is data. It is ones and zeros. It's digital recordings that are stored on a computer and can be searched or indexed or referenced in ways now that we may or may not understand, but certainly in the future, we don't know exactly what is going to be what people can do with that footage. Chris Brook, I want to go back to you. I know it's that storage and that potential for it to be used in some other way that has you folks at the ACLU particularly concerned.
Absolutely, and I think it really is something that calls out for regulation, and I think there needs to be a default to limited retention, where unless something is flagged for a particular purpose, then it is purged out of the system in a set very short period of time. Of course, there can be exceptions when they're ongoing criminal cases, for example. But the example that I gave previously of Asheville's police department capturing on video and then retaining all of the political protests that had happened over a series of years really raises very big red flags about this technology's possibility for abuse and capturing what should be protected First Amendment activity, whether it's engaging in political protests, attending a particular house of worship, that the government should just not be retaining unless they have very good reasons, such as a ongoing criminal investigation, to be retaining that data.
Yeah, and who can have access to that data is another question. You know, if they're keeping those political protest videos, what are they using it for? Who has access to it? Who within the department? Security of this data is a huge issue that law enforcement agencies really have to make sure that they take a lot of effort to protect the security. It's not difficult to go on YouTube and find dash cam footage that was not officially released mm-hmm. by a department. It was leaked by someone within a department. And if the agency will not reprimand or even let go individual officers guilty of those leaks or other staffers that are guilty of those leaks, that presents a tremendous problem, because this is a wealth of data, as you already pointed out, Tom, that could be used for very nefarious purposes.
And there are entire YouTube channels. I mean, the crazy drunk stop or the crazy criminal is turning into its own little trope, basically, on a mm-hmm. YouTube channel. I mean, you're nodding your head yes.
And I don't agree with it. We've had this discussion in-house. My officers in Davidson know exactly where they stand in terms of the fact that if that was released, if there was video that was released and showed up on YouTube, there'd be an investigation and we would be finding out who released it. When people dial 911, they don't get to shop. Mm-hmm. You don't get to shop for your own police department or your own fire department. And we're there, and we're there because of our public trust relationship. And we have to honor that trust with residents, with citizens, that they do have privacy in these moments when they have to call us. Chris and I were having this discussion. It's so important for law enforcement to understand that if they're really going to be a partner, then they have to honor their residents, their citizens, and that whole privacy issue.
And I want to bring up a question or a comment that we got on Twitter. Actually, this is from Megan on Twitter. She writes, as part of a comprehensive police community relationship revision, yes, she thinks that body cameras can in fact help build trust. But as a member of the public, as somebody who may or may not have access to video, you know, trust is there when you think that that camera is in fact going to capture and then be shared, that the camera footage is actually available for nonpartisan people to take a look at. Is that the case, would we say, overall? I mean, it still seems like it's, you know, even in a place like Davidson where it sounds like you have, you know, very good intentions, it's still in your control. Can you understand the frustration the public would have with that?
Absolutely. And that's why I would support a thoughtful, thought-filled discussion and move in the state legislature to look at this issue and, to, and as Chris said from ACLU, bring us into the 21st century. With our laws to bring us up to where the technology is.
Now, waiting for the General Assembly to act can be a bit of a wait, shall we say. What do we do in the meantime in terms of trying to manage the expectation of the public? They're not going to necessarily be able to walk into any police precinct. You know, maybe in Davidson, it's an exception to the rule, but they're not necessarily going to be able to walk into a police station in Greensboro, where I was reporting from, or here in Charlotte, and just say, "Show me the footage," and they'll be like, "Sure, here's a computer. Sit down." Right. What is the fine line there? What do we have to do to try to manage the expectation of the public?
Well, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I would just say, and I think it's something that we have sort of touched upon obliquely thus far, but just to say it directly, you know, I think there has to be, especially as Tom notes, we shouldn't just be sort of spinning our wheels here waiting for the legislature to do things when they're proactive steps that can be taken. I think one of the solutions is really having a public dialogue and law enforcement engaging with their particular community about how they're going to be using this technology, ensuring that the public knows this technology is going to be deployed, how it's going to be deployed, how they can get access to it, if they can get access to it, how long this footage is going to be retained. It was very heartening to hear earlier Chief Miller state that the policies regulating Davidson's use of body cameras are available on their website. I think that's a fantastic first step, but I think conversations like these and also conversations in particular communities that oftentimes have a great deal of interaction with the law enforcement community, can go a great deal of the distance to illuminating this technology for the public and allowing them to have an appropriate role in shaping its use.
Now, another concern about this footage is, again, it is data in its purest form, and it is stored on computers. And as we all know and we hear about in the news all the time, computers can be hacked. I don't know if anything has happened yet when it comes to body camera footage, but are there concerns there as well about the security of the systems that hold and store this footage?
It's certainly something that we've talked with our provider about. We believe that we have a fairly secure system. I'm really clear that there's nothing 100%. And so, yes, it's going to be a concern.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. If Sony can be hacked, mm-hmm. or if our federal government can be hacked, then anybody can be hacked. And that's just another example of the technology outpacing itself in that we're trying our best. I know that there's millions and millions of people working on the internet security issues, but there will never be a 100% fail-safe, which is, mm-hmm. as Chief Miller just stated.
And I'm wondering, too, with, again, a hypothetical, but if there was a hack, would the populace, let's say that a video of me gets posted on YouTube yet again and it was from a hack, does that hold, you know, is that a potential liability for police departments when it comes to possible suits?
Potentially, a creative attorney might be able to bring an action if there was some clear evidence that the agency that lost the data was completely careless with respect to the security. But absent that carelessness, I mean, it might even have to be something more like just recklessness. Mm-hmm. If an agency is taking the steps, if they are keeping abreast of the most recent technological changes in security, if they are taking the steps that other agencies they're participating as other community agencies are with securing their data, then it would be very difficult to sue for a breach, absent to some carelessness or recklessness.
Well, and you know, the other thing, and taking it just in a slightly tangential direction, and again, I think that Chief Miller is very rightly not going to tolerate officers leaking embarrassing dash cam or body camera footage to the media. That should be a private interaction. But I think also there should be policies in place to ensure that those sorts of interactions are not circulated throughout police departments, throughout law enforcement, to sort of hold people who might not be at their best moment up to ridicule or derision within in the department.
And that's interesting because at least with Greensboro police, when I talked with them, they said that they can any officer can share any footage recorded on their body cameras with another officer for training purposes. Mm-hmm. Is that the case in Davidson as well?
They'll share it at the end of a shift. Many of my officers are using their own body-worn camera video as a training for themselves. How was my conduct during this interaction? What did I say? How did I say it? Could I have said it better? So they're actively using it, yes.
And I understand the value from training in that kind of broader mm-hmm. sense. But what about Chris Brooks' point when it comes to sharing, you won't believe what happened to me when I was at work kind of videos?
It certainly better not be shared outside the agency. We had a recent stop where we had a gentleman who was having serious mental health issues, and it was captured on video. I do not think that that's something that we got him the help that he needed. He was not injured in any way. It's not a video that I think should be public record. If his family wanted to come see it because they were concerned about him, if his mental health providers wanted to come see it, we would certainly, and it was something that we could share, we would. Our officers did look at that video for training purposes. Again, even though there, you could say that there was some while they could have made fun, our folks aren't like that. They got the fact that this man was having very serious issues.
But as a chief, I mean, it sounds like you may be fortunate because I know in some of the different places I've worked just in journalism, training is one thing. But if you see something a little crazy and you share it around, people tend to make jokes. Does that worry you?
It does. I have 41 years in law enforcement at this point. I was in a big city police department. I think that one of the ways officers sometimes deal with the violence and inhumanity that they see is that they develop a macabre sense of humor. And so that does happen. I think that limiting that exchange needs to be very, very careful and very close.
Now, I want to go back to something we've also talked a bit about, which is the public's access and the laws that define that. We've been, I think, giving a fair teasing to the General Assembly. But I want to bring up a note, actually, that I received from Jonathan Jones, who is the director of the North Carolina Open Government Coalition. And he's making reference to, again, our reporting in Greensboro, where, as in Davidson, they say basically that we tend to see this as public records or as criminal evidence, and therefore it's not public record. Mm-hmm. He says that take on access to videos is unique, to say the least, and any blatant statement that the videos are not subject to the state's public records law is suspect. And I'm going to go to our law professor here in studio. And what do you think about that? I mean, is it a clear-cut yes or no?
Unfortunately, it's never a clear-cut yes or no answer. There's certainly a strong validity to why we have open records law. It's sort of central to our foundation of liberty and having the government be of the people. And like we talked about earlier, there are certainly good reasons why access to these videos should be encouraged, and there are certainly reasons why we would want to curtail the access to the videos. And something that Chief Miller and I talked about briefly beforehand was some clarification needs to be provided and some in-camera review process needs to be provided where someone can make a judgment call besides the agency that is hoping to either disseminate the information or keep the information under lock and key, and someone other than the person who is either seeking the release of the information or trying to thwart the release of the information, there needs to be some neutral person, some neutral system in place to play the gatekeeper.
Sure, and an arbiter would help, but let's say it's a situation where there's a police-involved shooting. You know, or some kind of a controversial encounter between the police and the public. I mean, let's face it, if you're a member of the public and you're told I can't even see the most mundane traffic stop footage necessarily, or, you know, your average run-of-the-mill stop of whatever kind from the police, and then the police say, well, we've looked at this controversial incident which was captured on a body camera, but trust us, there's nothing to see, it's all fine. Is that the fatal flaw in this system when it comes to building trust? Is that gate between the public and the footage going to cause more questions than answers for the public?
I think that it absolutely makes it such that the body camera technology can't fulfill its full purpose. If it's only going to be a tool that can be utilized by law enforcement, it's not going to be readily accessible to those wishing to view their interaction with law enforcement. And, you know, I agree with Professor Woodyard that the laws that we have in place are not necessarily a model of clarity in regards to whether body camera footage would constitute a public record or whether it would be a confidential personnel record. But it's one thing for law enforcement and local communities to note that with frustration. But that needs to be followed up with action, and I think we have seen some indications with the actions that Greensboro and Charlotte have taken, really lobbying and lobbying and with diligence for the General Assembly to clarify these laws, make it plain that the default is towards some sort of public access to this footage, and bring our laws into the 21st century when it comes to regulating it.
And that's all the time we have this morning. Chris Brook is with the North Carolina chapter of the ACLU. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Professor Christopher Woodyard is with the Charlotte School of Law. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And Chief Gene Miller from the Davidson Police Department. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
This is Charlotte Talks.